being an entrepreneur is hard, and then being broke is hard. So you got to really choose your heart. What we tell everybody is exposure leads to expansion. One of those things that determines success is knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at, understanding your strengths and your weaknesses. So I think that we have to tell people it's okay to be entrepreneurial minded and work in the company. Everything that we've ever accomplished in our life has come as a result of being exposed to something. Because once you're exposed to something, you can't unsee it. Mm-hmm. Once you hear something, you can't unhear it. I mean, it was tough growing up, but as you look back at it, I tell people all the time, your childhood, your struggles and your pains that you experience in life is a resource. Nothing is hard for us, because when I was growing up, not having something to eat, that's hard. You know, seeing our house, my mom, it was rough for us growing up. She was a single parent. So just what we had to experience was just different. It was tough.
The Mathis twins, Josh and Jeremy, how are you guys doing?
Pretty good, man. What's up, man? Happy to be here.
So excited you guys made the trip. I've been a fan of yours on social media, and I reached out blind and cold and said, I'm a fan. I want you guys to come on to San Diego, come on the show. And you guys were generous and humble enough to say yes. So thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for having us, man. We're just honored to be here, honored to share with your audience, man, and just share our story. And truly inspired by everything that you built here. Like,
yes.
Very, very inspired. I don't think you understand walking through and just seeing this. I'm very inspired right now. So
well, thank
it's going to be a really great show.
Yes, thank you. That means a lot. I mean, it's hard because like I live it. So yeah. It's nice to get that feedback. But I mean, I'm inspired by you guys. I mean, you guys are the definition of serial entrepreneurs. You know, I've followed your story and I follow your community that you're building, because you're extremely successful and you're doing something by helping others. Your channel is all about giving the ups and downs of investing in real estate. It's something that, you know, I mentioned to you guys, I'm dabbling in and trying to get more into as I move through my life. It's not something I've ever done a ton with, and it's scary. But before we get into all that, because I think it's so important to go back to come forward.
Yeah.
The show is all about success formula. And I believe success is formulaic, that if you peel back the onion on all successful people, there's a formula we follow.
Agreed.
And you two have clearly done that since, I mean, you were like 12 years old and started your first lawn business.
Yeah.
Did you guys always know you were going to be entrepreneurs? Did you always have that?
I think, one of the things, one of our lives, what we tell everybody is exposure leads to expansion. So we saw my mom, who worked at the post office, and then she came home and she had her hair business on the side. I saw my granddad, who owned corner stores, who owned rental properties, who owned little businesses in the community. So we saw that growing up. And we always said, we're going to own McDonald's and hotels. That was our thing. We're going to own McDonald's and hotels. So it was always just in us to go out and make money, because we saw it. We saw it firsthand with my mom and my granddad, and it was just something that we just always wanted to do.
But then, too, I think our personalities are not fit for corporate America. Mm-hmm. we talk about this all the time. Like, being an entrepreneur is hard, and then being broke is hard. So you got to really choose your heart. So I know for us, we always say, because you're in business, you have your hard days. You have those days where you're like, man, is this really what I want to do? And when we have those days, we look at each other like, yo, this is really what we want to do, because I'm not going to corporate America. I'm not going to corporate America.
So you just said something. You said exposure leads to expansion?
Yep. Yes.
I love that saying.
Yeah, that's something that I was driving last year with one of my buddies, Jacoby, and it was 2 years ago at this time. And he was like, bro, exposure leads to expansion. And when he said that, I told Josh, I said, bro, that's our life's mission. We have to help people understand how exposure leads to expansion, because everything that we've ever accomplished in our life has come as a result of being exposed to something. Because once you're exposed to something, you can't unsee it. Mm-hmm. Once you hear something, you can't unhear it. And if you are a really inquisitive person, it's just once you're exposed to it, you're like, I see you build out this studio. It's like, okay, yeah. I'm exposed to it. I know it's possible. Yeah. So exposure leads to expansion.
And what you just said is actually, it was on the number one thing I used to teach my sales reps. You can't unsee something and you can't unhear it.
Yep.
You don't have to sell to people, you have to inform people. And if you inform them about it, then from there, they're not going to unsee it or unhear it, and it's up to them.
That's really nice.
It's like we were talking about how we sell franchises, that it's not, I don't sell franchises. I talk about what we're doing, and those who want to be part of the community can join the community. And that's what I did with you guys. Honestly, I wanted to learn about real estate. Yeah. So I started looking at more real estate content, more real estate information. I stumbled across your guys' channel. And I started to get exposed to what you were doing. And I'm watching you two, and you guys are just killing it. I mean, you're just doing all those things. So you always knew you were going to be entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Always.
Yeah. Always. Always. And so your first business was when you were 12 years old?
It was really when we was eight. So when we were eight, we told one of our neighbors, we heard him say, man, I don't like taking out my trash. I'll pay you guys to do it. So he started paying us $2 per trash can that we took out and then brought back in. And then we went down the block. Hey, who need trash taken out? We're going to say no to an eight-year-old. Even regardless of your financial circumstance, yeah. You're just going to say yes. So that got us exposed to making money and then falling in love with money. Then that led us to the lawn business, which led us to other businesses. And then now to where we are with real estate. So,
what were you buying when you were 8 years old with all that money?
All the candy and the snacks that I wanted. Yeah, all the candy and the snacks. But one thing about us, we've always been frugal, on the frugal side. We've never really been that really big spenders. Even when we were young, you think about it, we've always saved money. So, yeah, we brought some snacks here and there, but it was really saving money, stacking.
Saving.
Yeah.
So you were probably the wealthiest 10-year-olds on the in the playground?
Especially where we were from, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a nice chunk of change.
Yeah. We was up, especially where we from, we was up, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, we were just talking, but you guys grew up not too far from where I went to law school in Miami.
Yeah.
St. Thomas Law School.
Yeah, the hood of Miami. Yeah. Yes. But for us, I wouldn't change anything about our story. I'm glad everything, like my brother said earlier, everything happens for a reason, and our story happens for a reason, and for us, like growing up in the hood, growing up the way that we did, is produced who you see today. That's why we're in one of the reasons on why we're in front of you. So, I mean, it was tough growing up, but as you look back at it, I tell people all the time, your childhood, your struggles, and your pains that you experience in life is a resource, and you got to be able to tap into that resource. So I tell people all the time, nothing is hard for us, because when I was growing up, not having something to eat, that's hard. You know, seeing our house, my mom. It was rough for us growing up. She was a single parent. So just what we had, the experience was just different. It was tough. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So what you were about to say with your mom, did you guys have some major event that changed that whole thing when you were young?
So my father went to prison when we were six. He was a drug lord. So he was in prison from the time we were six to
like 22.
To about 22 years old. So my mom was a single parent to five kids. So growing up, it was tough. And like he said, she worked all day at the post office and then came home, and she had her hair business on the side. So my mom gave us two rules growing up. I want all A's and B's on your report card. I don't never want the police to bring you home. So for us, like, I don't want to say the streets raised us, but my mom was always working. So she was there. She was present. She, you know, my mom is our superhero, but we also learned some valuable lessons in the streets as well.
Did you follow those two rules?
No, I didn't.
He didn't.
I didn't. I was bad, like bad growing up, and not bad in the sense that I caused trouble. But in class, and you just always got to let your child be who they are. I was bad growing up. I'm talking about my mom had to come to school every day and pick me up because I was causing trouble in school. And I always got straight A's in academics, but in conduct,
just were acting up or fighting or?
Just acting up. Acting up, being a class clown. But I pick up things very quickly. So I pick it up and I'm just sitting there waiting, just like, So I tell my mom, I wasn't a bad kid. I was just really bored because the teacher explained the concept. I got it. Now I'm sitting there waiting for everybody else. What is an 8-year-old, 5-year-old kid going to do? Once you get bored, you get active. So I wasn't bad.
But you were.
I was good.
You were good.
I've never had conduct issues or anything. I was always good.
So if you want to know, Jeremy's the wild twin. Josh is the more calm twin.
Yeah, he's more aggressive than I am. I'm passive aggressive. He's the sales agent that comes in and we got to get these deals close. That's all we got to do. I'm like, well, we got to fulfill it too. I don't care. We're going to close them. We'll figure out everything else.
It's actually good because you guys are partners to have both sides.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Correct. And for us, we understand that in life, you got to understand one of those things that determine success is knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at, understanding your strengths and your weaknesses. So for a long time, we didn't understand our strengths and our weaknesses. Now we are understanding that, and we are taking hold of that and understanding, okay, Josh is good here, Jerm is good here. So when it comes to the business, okay, we need this type of personality. Jerm, you're good there. You go do this, and then vice versa. And it's worked really well for us.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that, because you're clearly thinking about what has made you guys successful time and time again. I mean, the real estate, we're going to get there because that's the part I'm most excited about just from where I'm at, but... Yeah. I mean, you've had a successful exit with your dental business.
We had a cleaning business where we started this cleaning business with the guy who I told you about, who's really good in franchising. And the idea behind it was we were going to franchise this concept. We were going to be the proof of concept
and then go out and start franchising. So we saw a problem where dental offices wasn't being cleaned how they should be cleaned. So we started going out, we got clients, and eventually we got to a point where we had a nice monthly recurring revenue, and we realized how much we hate the business. So it was like, bro, you can go and you guys can sell this business. Again, going back to exposure. Growing up where I grew up, the only thing that you can really sell, at least in my mind, was food, clothes, and drugs. Nothing else can be sold. I had no concept of selling a business till he exposed us to it. We listed it on the market with the broker, and then we started investing in real estate, and then we sold that company. So
at a huge discount.
I'm glad you mentioned you didn't realize that you could sell a business.
Yeah.
Obviously, your first exposure to business was with your mom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Watching her with her hair business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you got exposed to entrepreneurship in a way with her side hustle.
Yeah.
As you were doing that, most businesses actually close. They don't get sold. Yeah. Most people don't know how to sell a business. And to your point about exposure leads to expansion. Yeah. You don't know that you can sell a business. When you're kind of getting into the, when you were getting into the dental business and someone opened your eyes to the fact that you could sell it. So you guys said what?
It was a game changer for us, because for us, when we first started in business, we had one business fail, another business didn't do well. And then that's when David, who he was telling you about, he was like, guys, let's start a business together. So we started a business, we grew the business. And when he even came to us about the idea of selling the business, it was like, I didn't even know this was even possible. So to go through that process and prepare the business to sell, because when we had the idea to sell, we didn't have no processes, no systems, none of our customers want contracts. So we had to get the business ready to sell. We had to get the accounting ready. Yeah. So now everything that we start, we understand that, you know, we need to track our KPIs. We need to have some systems and processes in place and all the things that you need in order to grow a business so that you can sell that business. Mm-hmm.
Yep, making it a sellable business. How influential and impactful was your mom during this experience? Because she was obviously running her business the whole time.
Well, so luckily my mom, she had her business because it had to subsidize her income. She didn't make enough for food stamps, but we were still broke. Like we were still struggling every single month. So that was just to subsidize her income. And then once all of us got out the house, then she stopped the hair business because she got to a point where she's always been working. But going back to how she really helped us is just support. She made me believe in myself.
Yep.
It's nothing that nobody in this world can tell me I cannot do, because my mom started at home that you need to believe in yourself and you need to bet on yourself every single day. So what do? I wake up, one of your core values, I be remarkable. I go out and I get things done because that's what I saw from my mom, and she instilled that in us. So it's important as a parent, you are actually parenting your kids because they are watching and they are listening. And my mom led by example all the time. So as we are leaders now, I understand that I have to lead by example every single day because somebody's watching me.
That's right.
It's so important.
But it goes back to a point that you made. You was on a show when you was telling them as parents, we owe it to our kids to show them what it means to be an entrepreneur, because on the job, there's a ceiling, right? Mm-hmm. But as an entrepreneur, you can break past that ceiling. So I tell them all the time, because me and my girlfriend, we're both entrepreneurs, and my kids get to see that every day. They're getting exposed to that every day. So now they don't know. They understand that, okay, daddy was an entrepreneur. And the reason he was able to come to my baseball game or my tennis match is because he was an entrepreneur. So now it drives them to probably want to be entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah. Well, I think in what you guys just said, they're watching and you're leading by example, whether you realize it or not.
Yep.
And I had this conversation with too many people where they give me the list of reasons why they can't pursue something. Mm-hmm. And I try to explain to them, you're teaching your children to not go after your dreams.
Yes.
You're teaching your children to settle versus swing and miss, but go for it. They're watching.
I
would rather fail and have my kids know that dad tried than do something I hate, leaving mediocrity in my life and showing my kids that that's how you have to live.
I like that. I love that.
You know?
That's really, really good. And it's especially coming from a baseball guy, swing and miss.
Yes. You play baseball?
No, but I know you.
Yeah,
you're a Padres fan.
Yes, I am. Go Padres.
Let's go Dolphins.
You guys have a nice team. I like Tua. I didn't like those concussions, but I like Tua.
We're going to see what happens this year.
So your siblings, you're 2 of 5.
Yep.
So are you the Oldest, youngest, middle.
So we have an older sister, then it's us two, and then we have two younger sisters.
And our story is an exact I don't want to say replica, but is an exact reason on why exposure is so important, because us and all of our siblings, we grew up in the same house. We chose different paths. Like my older sister, she works a job. My two younger sisters work a job, and nothing against them. I love them.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But we were exposed, and what we were exposed to at a younger age had a different impact, right? I think for my sisters, they want the comfortable life, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, entrepreneurship is definitely not for everybody.
Yeah.
I actually don't want my daughters to do entrepreneurship.
Really?
I don't. I think I know them. I don't think they're wired for it. I don't think their personality would thrive as being the founder, leader of a company. They could be entrepreneurial minded, but I think that they need to work inside of an organization and lead a department, be a leader. Yeah. You should always be a leader. Yeah. You should always be entrepreneurial minded.
Yeah.
But I don't see them wanting to go raise capital and deal with the 24/7, 365 that comes with being I started this company.
I'm so grateful you said that. And I think that's the message, that it's our responsibility to get that out more, because on social media, entrepreneurship has been glorified.
Yes.
Since it's glorified. Oh, it's entrepreneur. Not everybody's an entrepreneur. And I think right now, what supposedly is going to happen to the economy, I think it's going to make and break a lot of people and show them that they're not real entrepreneurs, because it's a lot of tough decisions going to have to be made. And you already seeing it in the media right now and everything that's happening. So I think that we have to tell people it's okay to be entrepreneurial minded and work in the company.
Yes.
Because I like what you said when you was like, I have people that work for me that are entrepreneurial minded. I create the vision, and because they're entrepreneurial minded, they know how to drive the boat. Something you say like that, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Oh, no, for sure. And that's the only people I want to hire. I think everyone needs to be entrepreneurial minded. If you want to be remarkable and you want to be great, you have to be disruptive in your own world, whatever it is, even if you're a teacher. Don't go in and just teach the syllabus the same way everyone else did and make kids uninspired.
Yeah.
Find a way to inspire the youth and teach the information in a way that's engaging. You should be looking to push the envelope. We should all be doing that.
Yeah.
That doesn't make you have to... We have glorified entrepreneurship to the point where a lot of people don't understand what's required.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What you two have to go through at the very top, where it all falls on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all your employees and raising money and making sure the bills are paid and all the stress and all of that. It doesn't clock out at 5:00.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. And if you're not wired for that, if you don't have that personality, it's not the highest quality of life.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's a part of your success formula, is hiring entrepreneur mindset people?
I think that I only work with people who have I only want to work with people who have an entrepreneurial mind or a desire to be remarkable. And I think entrepreneurial mind means they're always going to create, and I don't think that's always the case. But I think if anyone who comes and works with me and I want to be as a teammate or an employee or a friend, if you're not striving to be the best version of yourself every day and pushing the envelope, I'm uninspired and it's not going to work for me.
Yeah. Like that.
I don't
like
want that. You to just cash in. Oh, yeah, I'm good. You know, hey, let's do the same thing I did yesterday over and over again. Because why? You know, what do they call it? Quiet firing. This new generation where
I know what you mean.
Where the youth is just doing the bare bone minimum.
Oh, wow.
You know, I tell my kids, done isn't when you can check the box. Done is when you can't do it any better.
Mm.
Doesn't mean you're not going to be better than yourself tomorrow, but today, is that the best you can do?
Yeah.
If it's not, do more.
Yeah.
Try again.
Yeah.
I hate average.
Yeah.
It just bothers me. Yeah. Doesn't make me always the easiest person to hang out with socially, but I hate average.
But again, though, I don't even, sometimes we have to be careful of trying to dumb down ourselves for other people to catch up. And he tells me this all the time. He was like, we need to hire employees that can keep up with us. We don't need to slow down to their pace. So for us as entrepreneurs, even in our friend circle, I tell him all the time, it's certain people I don't want to hang out with, certain people I don't want to talk to anymore, because that energy rubs off on you. And then before you know it, you're slowing down. You're not thinking as big as you're supposed to be thinking because of who you're around. So I want to make sure I'm around those entrepreneurial mindset people, they have big visions, big goals, big dreams. So when I come to them and I'm like, yo, I'm about to build out a $200,000 studio, they're like, bro, let's fucking do it.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you sure you want to do that?
Right now in this time?
No, I want to go after my dreams. This is what I want to do. And I need you as a friend to be able to support me on that.
Your friend should.
Yeah.
Friends should support each other. Yeah. They should push everyone to be a better version of self. Don't tell me the reasons it can't work. Tell me the reasons it can.
Yeah.
Right? Because just as easy as it can, it can't. Fun story. So statistics are statistics. And 9 out of 10 businesses fail. 9 out of 10 businesses will never sell. 99 out of 10 restaurants fail. I mean, the stats are all over the place. But what about the 1 out of 10 that do?
Yeah.
Hey, fitness fans, ready to crush your fitness goals? Make your move to EOS Fitness, where becoming a member starts at just $9.99 a month. Gyms are open 24/7 and packed with the latest gym equipment to keep your workouts fresh. What are you waiting for? Give them a call, drop by, or hit up jefffenster.com/EOS to join. EOS Fitness, better gym, better price. Now, let's get after those goals. What's the difference between them? And that's the whole purpose of this. That's my mission. My mission is to help everyone understand that everybody can be remarkable.
Yeah.
Everybody can be extraordinary. I'm an ordinary guy. Yeah. You guys are ordinary guys. You figured out what stuff to do to get extraordinary results.
Yes. Yep.
So did I. And it's nothing. We come from different backgrounds, different sides of the country.
Yes.
And it's about that success formula. Your mom instilled that in you guys. You saw what success could be. You saw that if I do my best every day, I bust my ass.
Yep.
I don't quit. I mean, you tell me what else you learned from your mom, but watching her work a full-time job and take care of you and your sisters, put you through that. I mean, you had that hunger. You recognized what needed to happen.
Yeah.
So when you sold the company, you've yet to touch real estate.
No. So let me give you a little bit more on that.
Please.
So what happened was we had to clean the company and we were hustling and bustling. Like, we grew the company fairly quickly. From the time we started till we sold, it was within 18 months. He was about to have his first daughter, and we was in the car one day. He was like, man, we got to make more money, but we got to be able to spend more time with our family. So let's start doing real estate. Long story short.
Had you never touched real estate before?
Never touched real estate. We paid a mentor $55,000, and they essentially scammed us. They didn't teach us anything. And at that point, we had a decision to make.
$55,000 off credit cards.
Off credit cards.
It wasn't cash. It was credit cards.
So this is actually, I want you to finish this story, but the very first piece of content I saw from you guys on social media was this story.
Oh, wow.
so I know how you're going in, but I want to hear it again firsthand.
So we paid this person $55,000. They didn't teach us anything. And we said, at that point, we got a decision to make. Do we rise up or do we lay down? I saw from my mom. My mama rose to the occasion every single time. I was exposed to that. I got to rise to the occasion every single time. So we said, you know what? We're not going to let this stop us. We hired another mentor. We paid them $15,000 before we ever do
on
credit cards. Before we ever do a deal, we $70,000 in debt. We still got the cleaning company, and we hired this mentor. And this mentor, once we hired the second one, changed our lives. We went all in on real estate. We did our first real estate deal. We made, $19,500? And we called the broker who had our company listed. You got 1 week to sell the company. We took a big loss, and we sold the company, and we just went head first in real estate.
What was your first real estate deal?
It was wholesale transaction.
So just explain to the audience what that is.
Wholesaling is when you get a property under contract typically at a discount from a distressed seller, and then you go out and you find an investor that can actually buy the property, and you arbitrage and you make the spread. So you get the property under contract at $100,000, you sell it to another investor at $120,000, and you make $20,000. That's essentially what wholesaling was. That mentor, he was like, bro, I think wholesaling is the first, this is where you guys need to start, because if you know how to wholesale, you know how to find deals, which we believe is the number one skill that you need to have in real estate.
Yep.
Even in business, if you know how to find deals, you will always be able to make money if you know what you're doing, if you're resourceful. So he said, with wholesaling, it teaches you how to find deals. It teaches you how to underwrite those deals. And it teaches you how to market. Things that are really, really important. So we learned wholesaling. Then we did wholesaling year one. Year two, we started doing fixing and flipping. So buying houses, fixing them up, and then reselling them. Year three, we started buying rental properties. Year four, we did our first development project. And the last 2 years is just really meshing everything together. So
for wholesaling, because I've heard this term a lot. I've never done a wholesaling deal, but a lot of the people who speak on stages before and after me are real estate people, and they always talk about wholesaling. So I have a question. If you can find a deal for $100,000, and me, investor, I'm going to buy it for $119,000, why do me, investor, need you to find the deal? Why can't I just go get it for $100,000?
Great question. Because that investor who's buying the deal, he has a different skill set. He has a different mindset. So one thing, like wholesaling is a business. Fixing and flipping is a business. Buying rentals is a business. And the guy who's buying it for me at 119, he operates he's either buying that deal to fix and flip it or buy and hold it. He's not spending money on marketing. He doesn't want the team. He doesn't want the overhead. He doesn't want to find the deal. He's okay with paying me a fee
so that he can focus on what he's good at. And he's good at flipping houses. So that's why they would buy that deal from us.
And are you hunting your deals with those bandit signs? Like, how are you finding the deal at 100?
So when we first started out, we were wholesaling on the MLS through real estate agents. And then back then, nobody was really doing online marketing as big as it is now, and at least in the real estate world. So him and I, we made the decision that we were going to start doing online marketing, and we got really good at online marketing, finding distressed sellers online that would search our website, sell my house for cash.
But I want to go a little deeper on that story, too, like especially for anybody that's in the partnership or even if you have team members. And I want to credit him for this because when we were doing MLS marketing, he was like, look, man, MLS is drying up. We need to start doing something else. And he was pushing hard to go online. And I'm like, yo, nobody's going online. Everyone's cold calling. Everyone's texting. We just need to do what everyone else is doing. And he pushed and he fought and he screamed. And he was like, yo, we need to go online. And that was one of the best decisions that we've made when it comes to real estate investing. But the point there is just you need to have partners. You need to have people around you that's going to challenge you, that's going to challenge the norm and say, like, look, everyone else is going this way. But here's our opportunity. Here's where we can fit in and really crush and dominate. And thanks to him, you know, we started going online and we really became really good at it.
So why would when you say a distressed seller, so I have a house. First, what do you mean by distressed seller? And two, why would I sell it to you for 100 if I can find the investor myself and just sell it for 119?
Well, because life happens.
Okay.
Most people are not in your situation where, God forbid, something happens to you tomorrow. More than likely, you can fund it yourself or you have the resources to fund it. We just think that's typical. Oh, I'll just get
that. That's our reality.
That's our reality. Somebody else's reality, if they need a bill paid quickly and they got to sell their house, they need that problem solved. Or if somebody, they don't know how to do a probate. Most people don't leave wills and they don't do estate planning. So when they pass away, their heirs are fighting over the estate. And then you come in and you solve the problem as to, hey, listen, I'll be the mediator. Family, I'll help you guys out. You're going to sell it to me at a discount, but I'm going to solve your problem where I'm just going to do all of the work. So you're solving someone's problem that they don't even know how to solve themselves.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's key. Like he said, like people sell to us at a discount because we're solving their problem and everyone's problem is different. So if you were working a corporate job and your corporate job says, hey, I'm promoting you, but this promotion is going to move you from LA to New York. You need to move in 30 days. I'm solving your problem. You need cash. You need to get the house sold so you can go to New York. Or there's a couple who's like he said, they are falling behind on their mortgage because their daughter is sick and they was, instead of paying their mortgage, they're paying the medical bills. So they call us and say, hey, you know what? I need to sell my house quick. Yeah. What would you give me? So everyone's problem is different. And it's just like one thing that we focus on in our business. One thing we tell our sales guys, we're not selling people. We're solving problems. We're solving problems and making friends. So if we do that really good on the phone with people, we can do as many deals as we want if we solve problems and make friends.
So I call you. I need to sell my house right away.
Yep.
How do you decide? It's obviously got a fair market value.
Yep. Yeah.
How do you decide how much to buy it from me for?
How do you decide that this location is going to be a great for Everbowl numbers?
Data.
The same thing. Data.
Same thing.
It's just a different. It's just a different data set.
Yep.
And once you understand the business, you understand what do I need to look at for this to be successful. If I'm buying an Everbowl, the reason why I'm buying it not only is because I want to be a part of your community, but because you already have a blueprint. You already know what data sets to look at. You already know what to do. It's the same thing in our business. The person, going back to your question, the reason why that person that's going to fix and flip the house is not going to find the deals is because they are good at one thing. They're not good at understanding marketing and KPIs. Mm-hmm. So for us, the way that we know how to analyze deals is just the same way you know how to put where to put Everbowl data.
So you look at the data.
Yep.
Now I say, you know what? Yes. So I'll sell you my house.
Mm-hmm.
So you're buying it for 100.
Yep.
We sign a contract. Now you have the other problem to solve. You need to sell it to an investor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you already have them lined up? Or if someone's out here and they're going to try their first wholesaling deal, how would they then find the investor?
So it's one of two ways you can go about it. You can already have that buyer lined up. We tell people, I don't think you shouldn't have a buyer because you don't have anything to sell them. I think once you get really good at finding deals, the buyers will come. And with technology, it's so easy to find that buyer, right? You can go, there's Facebook groups that help you find buyers. There's softwares that you can use to say, hey, I want to see everyone that has purchased a house cash within the last 60 days within a quarter mile of my subject property. So I can pull a list of cash buyers who paid cash for a house in the past 60, 90, 100, and, you know, 20 plus days. And I can call them and say, for instance, you're one of them buyers. I'm like, hey, Jeff, I saw you bought a house down the street on 123 Main Street. I have another one, similar demographics to this house. Is this something you're interested in? And your business is fixing and flipping. Your business is buying whole. You're like, hell yeah, man. Like, send me the information. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then you
do it. So that was your first deal. You arbitrage the middle between a wholesale distressed property.
Yep. That was our first 60 or 70 deals, like arbitraging wholesaling.
You've done what, over $35 million in real estate transactions?
Yeah, well, fixing and flipping, and that's only fixing and flipping and buying rentals. That doesn't include wholesaling.
Oh, that does not include the wholesaling.
No, wholesaling, it'll be way more than that.
So you did your first 60 or 70 deals was wholesaling?
Yep. Wholesale.
First. Sounds like you were killing it.
Yep.
Now, this is the part of the story I really love. You pivoted into fixing and flipping.
Yep.
Why the change?
It wasn't necessarily a pivot. It was just being exposed to the right set of people.
You know, someone smart told me exposure leads to expansion.
They sound pretty smart.
Yeah,
told you that.
Very intelligent. I'll introduce you. So, he looks like your brother.
I like that.
So we was exposed to being able to fix and flip a house because at the time we were comfortable wholesaling. Quick cash, you make your money. This is, you're talking about, we were at the time, our average wholesale deal.
Our average cash conversion cycle was 23 days where we get a deal on the contract, we make the cash is to us in 23 days.
And average at the time, wholesale deal was like 30 grand. So you just think about you running
23 days.
Like,
yeah,
why
you're turning.
At the time, we've never made this kind of money. Why am I going to fix and flip a house? Why am I going to do anything else? And everything happens for a reason. We wanted to make $25,000 wholesaling this property. Long story short, nobody wanted to pay us where we would earn $25,000. So we called our mentor and said, this is what's happening. He was like, why don't you guys fix and flip the deal? He exposed us to, because our only reality at the time was wholesaling. Mm-hmm. Why don't you guys do it? We gave him every excuse. And he gave us a rebuttal as to, you know, helping us believe in ourselves. So we went out, we did our first fix and flip, and we just started fixing and flipping houses like crazy. And then one day we had an opportunity to we had a property where we were going to wholesale it. This is how we bought our first rental. We were going to wholesale it. We called the mentor. He was like, hey, man, we're going to wholesale this deal. He was like, didn't you guys tell me you guys wanted to build rental? Like, that was your... you got into real estate? And that's why you need people that, you know, you share your vision with, because they can get you back on track. Because we just got used to making money.
I mean, everyone needs a coach.
Yeah, everybody. I truly believe in it.
I have a coach. My coach is sitting in the room right now helping me learn how to be better at podcasting.
Yeah. Yep.
And let me better at telling messages. I don't care how successful you are. If you don't have a coach, you are missing out. LeBron James has a coach.
Yes, Michael Jordan had one as well.
Yes, and he had a mind coach. Yeah, Tim Grover wrote my favorite book, Relentless.
Yeah. So he helped us understand that, you know, your mission, what you guys want to do is buy rentals. Why don't you keep it as a rental? So we brought that one as a rental, and then we started buying more rentals.
So fixing and flipping.
Yep.
Which is something I went to in college. I majored in regional development. Okay. I was going to fix and flip houses.
Okay.
I was.
Regional development.
Yeah. Basically, it was like SimCity. Okay. The game. Yeah. But it was a degree. It was an easy degree.
Okay.
The real truthful answer, and I've actually never told this on a camera before, but I'll tell you guys.
For honor. Thanks.
I had switched from a business major into a finance major and a finance major into some other stupid major that meant nothing because I was just trying to get through. And... the prettiest girl I had seen at the University of Arizona.
It's always a girl.
She walked by and I went to talk to her and I'm like, yeah, what's your major? And she said, regional development. And all of a sudden, now I'm in regional development. Fun story. Didn't marry her, never dated her, never went beyond that. But that's why I majored in regional. But I thought it was cool. It was like SimCity the game.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, I like real estate. I could do this. Gotcha. So I graduated law school. I actually bought a house my third year of law school, my first house, right when I graduated. I went to work for ADP and I got under contract while I was in law school, got the job at ADP, and I was going to fix and flip it. So I fixed it up. It was in Mira Mesa. And then, of course, the Great Recession happened and I bought it for $410,000 and within 6 months it was worth like $305,000.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I put some money into it and, you know, didn't work out too well. I lost a lot of money selling that house.
Yeah.
But that was my foray into it. But so how did you build... Fixing and flipping is a different skill.
Yeah.
It's not as easy. I mean, you have to know how much to put in. You know, Tariq Al-Musa gave me some advice on this topic just because I'm all about tactics, right? Mm. So I want to know your guys' formula. But he said, don't spend more than 50 cents of what you're going to get in your return in fixing it. So if you're going to sell it for $100,000 profit, don't spend more than $50,000 fixing it.
Our model is simple. Like we renovate based on the comparables. And also for us, we got to the point where we started understanding that there's a formula for flipping houses. And our formula was, we're going to focus on entry level houses, because if I can focus on entry level houses, I can do every house the same. Yeah. So the first couple of houses, we wanted to be like Tory. We wanted to be like the guys you saw on HGTV. So we would spend a lot of time at Floor and Decor, Home Depot, matching designs. And we started looking at where we were spending our time. We wasn't making more money, because we're always at the house, focusing on the house, trying to design the house. So we say, hey, how can we do this better? And again, having the right coach, having the right mentor. It was a guy who we were selling houses to, Ivan and his dad. Yeah. And his dad was like, yeah, man, you guys should do this. Look at every house you sold us. They all look the same, right? It was like, they all do look the same. So from there, we just found a color that we wanted to paint the outside, a color we wanted to paint the insides, same floor, same bathroom, same kitchen. And at that point, it was just churn and burn. And we started to understand that, one, by doing that, it was easy to scale. We didn't have to be so involved in the process. And at that point, as you know, we paid our employees to work, not to think. Because when you come into a house and you're doing every house different, you're asking yourself, is this tile goes here or does it goes there? Now you've done 40 other houses like this house. So you know, this is the tile we use in the bathroom. This is the tile we use in the living room. And it'd be like, at that point, we did over 120 plus houses, all the same.
So when you buy a house, how do you decide your budget?
So for us, it depends on the comparables. So based off where we were buying the house.
So it doesn't matter what you pay, it's just to get it to look like the comparable?
No, it does matter what we pay. That's the first thing. Now, yeah. It definitely matters what we pay. So for us, again, looking at data, so the way that we run the business is virtually. So we buy houses across America. Where we are based in Fort Lauderdale. I can buy a house in San Diego because, again, data. So I look and I see within a half square mile, the comparable says that this house is worth $500,000. I know if it's worth $500,000 based off what you as the seller tell me needs done in the house and my inspection before I close on the property, I know that if it's worth $500,000, the max I can pay just not.
And it needs $60,000 worth of work.
So if I want my profit margin to be whatever, I need to get it under contract at $250,000, put $60,000 into it, and then sell it for $500,000. Everybody has to figure out how much they want to make per house. And then once you figure that out, you just reverse engineer the process.
But is that a reasonable formula for, like, meaning if it's the comparables are $500,000?
Yep.
Can you really get it under contract at $250,000? I mean, wouldn't it have to be like damn near down to the bones?
Again, solving the problem. If somebody needs that cash.
So distressed.
If they need that cash, they need that cash in 15 days. Because you think about it, they can't go to the market because it's going to take 30 days just to get an appraisal. But if you're coming to me and you say, hey, I need cash in 15 days, and I'm telling you I can deliver, I can solve your problem, but you need to help me solve mine, which is I can't go above this number to buy the property, right?
Yep.
So you need to quit cash. I need to be here, and we meet at a place where we're both happy. Let's get this deal done.
So, and I'm not saying, just to make sure that your audience doesn't think that every house we got under contract, if it's worth $500,000, we're getting it at 50 cents on the dollar. That's
no,
not
no,
every
I know,
deal.
I know. I was just,
But it's typically, we want to be lower than 70%. If we are lower than 70%, we typically can make money on a house.
Yeah.
So 70% minus repairs is what we typically like to be.
That's a good formula, yeah. 70% minus repairs. I'm assuming.
And another thing, like, we don't do full gut rehabs.
Oh, yeah.
We don't do foot. So if I got to gut a house, that's not a house we want to do. I just want to come in, change the floors, I want to do what's called lipstick on a pig. Paint, patch, change the floors, change the kitchen, change the bathrooms. We're in and out of the house. Now, if we have to make additions, we have to gut it, and that's not our business.
Cosmetic.
Yeah. All cosmetic work is what we like to focus on.
Yep, go in and just turn and burn. How long does it take you to usually fix a house?
Typically, when we were churning and burning from start to finish, it was 97 days. From the time we bought it to the time it was sold.
And you hear, he didn't say 90 days, he didn't say 100 days, he said 97 days. Yeah. That's someone who knows their business.
He knows the business.
Like, I just, 97 days.
We know what we're good at. Jeremy's not good with dealing with our contractors. They hate dealing with him.
Nobody likes
him. They hate dealing with him.
I like you.
They hate dealing with him. So he's just like, okay, boom. I know how to deal with the contractor. And I like the design as well. So that's why I was like, hey, let me do the whole fixing and flipping. But yeah, our contractor's just like working with me. So I'm just like, look, I'll deal with all the fixing and flipping.
And one thing that works for us and anyone that has a partner and you're listening in, like, you guys have to have clear roles and responsibilities. Yeah. And who's ever responsible for this part of the business, they are the decision makers for that part of the business, and vice versa. And that's another thing that, since we've implemented within our business a couple of years ago, has helped us get to the next level. Because when we first started out in business, one of the biggest mistakes we made were there was no roles and responsibilities.
Yeah.
We were both managing our flips. I wanted to paint the house one color. He wanted to paint it another color.
And then I'll beat him up, and then we paint it what I want to paint it. Yeah, go back.
Don't believe that story. We could.
Next, nah, we just joking,
guys. Nah, we just joking, guys.
So when we start understanding, okay, I'm good here, you're good there, let me focus here, and whatever in our business, when it comes to fixing the flipping, I make all the decisions. Yep. How we're going to buy it, what we're going to renovate it, how much we're going to sell it for. And sometimes he may not like it, but that's my part of the business. And when it comes to our rentals, he decides who we're going to rent to. Well, he manages our property manager, but who we're going to rent to, how we're going to paint the buildings, how we're going to renovate it. There's certain decisions he makes that I don't agree with, but he's in charge of that part of the business. But what works for us is we understand what the vision is, what the end result is that we're after. So all the decisions that we make in our business is in alignment with what the desired result that we're after.
And you guys share that.
Yes.
Yeah. And that is so key. That's for key. Every yeah. team, whether you're brothers or yeah. just a team, is we're going to Hawaii.
Yes.
We're not going, we're going to Maui.
Yes.
We're going to this port at Maui.
Yes.
How we get there. Yes. Is up for interpretation.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
That's where we can argue.
Yep.
But if you're clearly defined on where you're going, yep. you can either converse engineer, and you both can be right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
Yep.
So, okay, so we were wholesaling, we're fixing and flipping, and we call the mentor. Now we're going to start renting.
Yep.
Now we enter what you your role.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your first rental
yeah.
was a wholesale deal turned rental hold.
It was a wholesale deal turned rental, and actually just flooded last week. So and you know, I don't know if you saw it. We got, like, it was floods in South Florida. So that was our first time dealing with that. But that's
is
that
everybody very okay?
First, everybody's okay. Thank God. Thank you for asking. That very first house that we said we were never going to sell, we're probably really going to sell it now that it got flooded. But yeah. So what was your question? I'm sorry.
No. So your first deal was this one.
Yep.
You end up starting a rental.
Yeah.
So now it's a new model.
Yeah. Yep.
This is buy and rent and hold and cash flow.
Yep. Yeah.
What is your rule? Well, first off, tell me about this first deal.
So the way that we got the deal was, it was an agent brought us the deal, and we went under contract, and for whatever reason, the agent just went missing. So for me, being who I am, everything happens for a reason. I'm very aggressive. If I want something, no is I don't see no. So I go to the owner's house and I'm like, wait, listen, I signed a contract with you. I don't know if you realize that, but you guys can't get out this deal. And she was like, yeah, I don't know why the agent's been acting funny. I think what happened was the agent got an offer on the side where they get whoever will get it under contract and make money. Long story short, I'm in the owner. We got it squared away. We got it squared away with the agent. We brought this house for $60,000. We got a private money lender to fund us 100% of the purchase price. And then we put the repairs on a credit card. Because we put the repairs on the credit card, and then we got to rent it out. And we've owned that property now for like 4 years, and we made like $1,200 net cash flow after all expenses off that one property.
So do you still have the hard money loan, or did you pay that off?
Oh, we paid that off. Yeah, we've been paid that off.
So you don't owe anything on it?
No, we don't. Well, we still, no, we owe, we
or
have
you
a
finance,
mortgage on
normal
it.
Yeah, finance. Yeah.
So we typically, we raise private money. So we get a private investor. They fund the house for us now. They give us 100% financing, typically on the purchase and the rehab. And then after we fix it up, we season the property, we get a bank that gives us 30-year debt on it.
Yep. So then you just do the normal financing.
Yes. Yeah.
So what is the minimum? So Jimmy Rex gave me a formula for this. He said he said make $100 for every 100 grand purchase price is the minimum cash flow to do a deal. Do you guys have a formula similar? Do you have a different one?
For us, simple, very simple. Can we make $400 net cash flow off this property from day one of owning it?
$400
per door. That's what we're looking at.
$400 minimum.
$400 minimum. Because for us, now you got to also take that into context. We are buying smaller multifamilies, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. His formula may work because he may be buying bigger units. No, bigger units. Probably single family. I don't know what he's buying, but for us, we typically buy duplexes, fourplexes, and triplexes, and we want to make cash flow after all expenses, $400 per door.
And when you say all expenses, we're talking principal, interest, property tax, insurance,
property
management, HOA fees if they're there.
We factor in, and we don't buy HOAs. We factor in vacancies, we factor in repair reserves, we factor in all of that. Once we factor all of that in, we have to be able to make $400 on that deal. If we can't, then we'll just wholesale it.
Now, let me go back to something. You don't do HOAs.
No.
We bought in an HOA before.
Yeah.
Experience. So what happened? We brought in an HOA. It was a great deal. We brought it for
it was
like
a condo for like
$30,000.
Right?
$30,000. And then at the time, it was rented when we brought it for $900, and it was supposed to be renting for like $1,400. You just think about that return.
Great math.
So we brought it like $30,000. We increased the rent and thinking, okay, our cash flow. I don't remember the numbers because it was so long ago. But let's just say we thought our cash flow was going to be $800. It ended up after we brought it, after we increased rents, like within 6 months, the HOA hit us with an assessment, and my $800 per month in cash flow turned into like let's just say $500. I don't remember the numbers, but in that moment, we decided. As an entrepreneur, I don't want anybody to determine the my fate on how much money I make. And the HOA, unless you are on the board and you know what's going on, which we have no desire to do that, we just didn't see owning HOAs as something that we wanted to have in our business model long term because you never know what's going to happen in HOA.
Mm-hmm. So then, okay. So I like that. So you're making $400 after all expenses. Yep. We don't do HOAs.
Yep, no HOAs.
Duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. As an entrepreneur, I know how meaningful it is to invest in the people and causes that are close to me. And on GoFundMe, it's easy, safe, and powerful to do just that. Whether you're supporting a family member, friend, local business, or charity. And whenever you make a donation, you're protected by the GoFundMe Giving Guarantee. Visit GoFundMe.com today to help make a positive difference in your community. Are you buying in the same market? Like, are you hyper-focused in the Fort Lauderdale market?
So we typically, right now, all of our rentals are in South Florida, but we're actually going to start buying. We're trying to locate a different market where we can start buying different rental properties because if you're in the business, you know the business. And one of the things that we see happening in Florida because of hurricanes and because most of the insurance carriers are leaving the state, when demand increases and supply decreases, insurance carriers are leaving the state. What happens to insurance premiums?
They go through the roof.
So now our cash flow, luckily for us, over the last couple of years, rents have gone through the roof because everybody wants to move to Florida. But I see the writing as being on the wall that insurance is going to continue to increase. It's going to affect cash flow. So for us, going back to the decision that we made when everybody's going right, people are still buying in Florida. Okay, let's go left. Let's find a different market where we can still make money and not have our cash flow affected. It's the same reason why we're not buying in HOAs. I don't want my cash flow to be affected. So
where are you looking?
Right now, Alabama, Indianapolis, and within the Ohio market. So we're looking.
St. Louis as well.
Yeah, St. Louis as well. But really, in those four markets is where we're looking. We haven't decided where we're going to do anything, but we're looking for right now.
So the last 4 years, real estate has gone through the roof.
Crazy.
And you're still getting deals.
Not as much as before. We have slowed down.
Yeah.
We have slowed down, yes.
Because I would assume, I mean, just people are selling homes now for more than what you can rent them for.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Even if you put 30, 40% down.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Just pass on those. Those are.
Nah, definitely.
For us, we're in this business to make money. And if we can't make money, we're not going to do the deal.
Yeah.
So I don't have to be the guy that says I own 100, 200, 300 doors, but that guy may not be making money. I'm in this business to make money. I want cash flow. We want to build long-term generational wealth. And for us, we have a model, and we want to stick to that model. And I think that's one of the things that has helped us get to this point is, okay, here's our model, and we're going to stick to our model. Every time we try to veer off our model, yeah, like we've done in the past, something happens. It doesn't go the way that we thought we wanted to do Airbnb. We always said we would never do Airbnb. The first Airbnb that we had, we made a little bit of money off of it, but it was just simply because of where it was located. It was by where they in Miami, where they have the F1, you know, where the Dolphins play. They have the Formula One. And we only made money during events, so we sold that house. We have another one that we've been working on now for about 19 months. It was supposed to be an Airbnb. We're going to end up selling the house. But the point is we've always said Airbnb is not a business model that we like. We start doing something that we always said we wasn't going to do, and here's the results. Let's stay in our lane. Yeah. And I think if you look at anybody who's ultra-successful, ultra-wealthy, they stayed in their lane. Look at Bill Gates. At his first 20, 30 years was Microsoft. You look at Warren Buffett, 20, 30 plus years before I even thought about doing anything else, I'm in this lane. You look at Larry Ellison at Oracle, I'm in this lane. So for us, we said we could do the same thing. Mm-hmm. What are we good at? What do we like to do? What do we enjoy doing? Let's stay in our lane.
You follow your formula.
Yep.
Formulas are, they're math. Yep. 2 + 2 = 4. Yep. It's when we try to get cute and funny with it. It's true with success. I mean, guys, you guys are a living example of something that I believe wholeheartedly. I try to use myself. I mean, I'm a fan of you guys just watching and listening to your stories. You clearly are going through it and saying, hey, man, this is our formula. You find the formula and then you just push your thumb on and you hit the accelerator and you say, this is what we're doing. We're not veering from it. We're not changing. We're not pivoting. And then when the writing's on the wall, you have that next success formula principle. Change ready. Yeah, we've been in South Florida, but weather is changing.
It's your stop, drop, and roll model.
Yes.
Yeah. Stop, drop, and roll, man. Yeah. Hey, it's not working. We got to stop, drop.
But even going to your stop, drop, and you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, I mean, for my audience, you know, what do you do when there's a fire? You stop, you drop, and you roll your way out, right? Mm-hmm. That's the same thing you got to do in life. Life happens. Stop what you're doing. Everyone, if water's coming in the building, turn the faucet off.
Yeah.
Let's stop that first. Now we got water up to our knees. Let's drop down. Let's figure out what we're going to do next and then roll forward, move forward, keep going.
And that's what we're doing right now. So you had asked
me, are we still shining that though?
So you had asked us, are we still doing a lot of deals? We see kind of where the market is going. In some markets, things are still going well, like in South Florida. But if you look at the data, you're starting to see that, you know, this wave of real estate is starting to come to an end. So for us, as we see this, we're starting to say we're not fixing and flipping and wholesaling as much as we used to. We're trying to phase out of that. We're going to always continue to buy rentals because we love the business from a cash flow and from a tax standpoint. And now we're rolling. Now we're rolling into buying businesses. We're taking the same principles. I know how to find a deal now. The same principles apply. So we're going to take those same principles and start going out and buying distressed businesses because we understand. I'm not saying we're experts, but we understand some businesses, they're really good businesses, but people get in their own way because they don't have systems and processes. And it's just the little things that make businesses great that we believe we can add. So that's what we're rolling into next.
So you will still be doing the rentals.
Yes. Always. The cash flow we get on our rental properties is it's not a lot of money, but I can sleep good at night knowing that I got this cash flow coming in.
Yep.
So now what we want to focus on in life is how do we build cash flow? Because now
how do we buy cash flow?
How do we buy and build cash flow is our only focus right now. Rentals is, I think, one of the best ways to do that. And then going and buying a business that's already cash flowing, go in and make some tweaks and increase the cash flow is our next thing.
So how do you deal with the high interest rates right now for rentals?
It goes back to buying deals the right way. So interest rates going to go up, they're going to go down. But you win in real estate. There's an old saying, you win when you buy, not when you sell. So if you buy that deal right, you'll be able to make money. So for us, our focus has always been on buying the best deals possible. So we're still finding those deals that we want to buy. It's not as many as we want. Yeah. But again, if you focus on finding great deals, interest rates are relative. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
And how much do you guys put down traditionally on a rental?
No money. No money. So we have a model where... Again, we don't come from a wealthy background. Everything that we have to go out and figure it out. So not understanding how to leverage banks when we first started and go out and get money from a bank, we say, okay, how can we go out and buy rentals? We was exposed to private money lenders, people that have money that want to invest in real estate. So we've been fortunate enough that all of our, I would say about 95% of our real estate deals have been 100% funded with other people's money since we began. We started.
So let's walk me through that, because I think to a lot of people listening, that just doesn't.
It doesn't make sense.
That seems like a dream. It's like, yeah, okay, that's cute. How does that really work?
So the way that it works is the great thing about real estate is it's tangible. You can feel it, touch it. So somebody who's investing their money for the first time or even the 100th time, they know that they can go and see that asset, right? So they know that my money is paying for that asset. That's number one. Number two, we're buying these properties so low where if we mess up, you can go and sell the deal and still make money on the deal. Because again, back to our thing, one of our success formulas in real estate, you win on the buy. Yep. We are very undisciplined in a lot of areas in our life. When it comes to buying real estate, we're very, very disciplined. So the reason why somebody's comfortable with giving me that money is because I'm buying it at 50, 60 cents on the dollar. If I mess up, they can sell it and still make money. I'm giving somebody a win-win situation.
So let's say you come to me.
Yep.
I have money.
Yep.
You have a deal.
Yep.
So you say, Jeff, here's the deal. We want 100%.
First and foremost, I'm trying to understand what your appetite is. Yep. I think the problem that most people, they're going and trying to solve a problem that doesn't need to be solved. If I come to you and I say invest in a real estate deal and you don't want to invest in real estate, I added no value to you. So first and foremost, I'm asking you, what is your appetite? How are you feeling? Do you even have any dry powder right now? What are you investing in? What kind of returns are you used to getting? Because if I tell you I'm going to give you a 12% return and you're used to getting a 5% return, oh, you just scam. If I come and tell you you're used to getting 5% consistent return, I come to you, you can get a 12% return, more than likely, you're probably going to say, oh, it's a scam. I don't want no parts of it. So before I do anything, I'm trying to understand you as an investor. What do you want? Are you even ready to invest?
I think one of our first rules, sorry to cut you off, when it comes to raising private money, is we want to date that investor, yeah. Right? And that's how we look at raising money. It's just like dating a girl. First night, 9 times out of 10, she's not going to sleep with you the first night, a.k.a. the investor's not going to give you the money. So I need to understand what your values are, what your morals are, what you want to be long term, what's your investing strategy. So we date that investor first before we go out and we start asking them for money. So we go through this dating process and we know what series of questions we want to ask them first. And then if it's in alignment with what it is that we're trying to accomplish and we know that, okay, it's a win-win on both sides, then we present the opportunity.
But going back to your question, so if I see you're a good fit, I'll show you the deal. Hey, listen, Jeff, here is 123 Main Street. We're buying 123 Main Street for $250,000. Here is ABC. And you can go look at the data on Zillow. This house sold for $550,000, $525,000, $515,000. I'm saying my house is worth conservatively $500,000. I'm buying it. Here's the contract for $250,000. Jeff, you have $250,000 in equity in this house. Do you understand what equity is, Jeff? Yes, I understand what equity is. So that means if you have to sell this house, you have to sell this house, you have all of this equity that you can go out, sell, and get it, and give me your money back. And the great thing is, Jeff, you know what the bank is, right? Yes, I know what the bank. Do you know that the bank owns really no real estate? Huh? The bank, they make their money because they take the money from you that you put in there, and they loan it out. So have you ever thought about becoming the bank and making as much money as the bank? Oh, that's interesting. So it's just more so knowing how to have a conversation with the private investor and then being able to present an opportunity, not a deal, but present you with an opportunity for you to make money. We had to change our mindset and understand that I'm presenting you with an opportunity. I'm not asking you for money.
Yeah. So say I say, okay, I love 123 Main Street.
Yep.
Here's $250,000.
Yep.
How long till I get my money back? How does that work usually?
It all depends on what type of deal it is. So if it's a fix and flip deal, typically what we do with our investors, we get a 1-year term on the money. So they give us $250,000, typically for a 1-year term with an option to extend. Again, we learned this the hard way that deals don't always go as you want them to go. So now we understand that, hey, we come to that investor and we ask them that I need you to loan me this money for a year with an option to extend. And depending on that investor's profile, if that investor's cool with making 8-9% of their money, that's fine. You have some that want more. So it depends on what the investor's return is that they're looking for.
Okay. And then with the rental?
It's the same thing. We're buying them so low. Everything starts and ends with the price that we're buying it at. So if it's a rental deal, that first rental deal, we bought it for $60,000. At the time we purchased it, it was like worth $145,000. It's a lot of equity in there. And I show the investor, look, it doesn't need that much work. It only needs X amount of dollars.
All we did was go in there and change the floors in the kitchen in that first rental.
Yeah.
So we put about $13,000 into that first rental. And we used the Burr strategy. We bought it.
The what strategy?
The Burr strategy. So we is BRRRR, I think. So it's we bought it, we renovated, we rented it out to a tenant, and then we did a cash out refinance. So that's how we was able to give that private money lender his money back, and then we was able to pay off the money on the credit card. Because again, we arbitrage, right? The house was worth $150, we got it for $60. When we did that cash out refinance, the bank could give you at the time, they was giving 75% loan to value. So we was able to, like I said, pay that investor back, pay the credit card back, and we essentially bought a property using none of our own money.
That's wonderful. So I got one last real estate question. It's a selfish one for myself.
Yeah.
Someone who's not, doesn't have the deal flow, looking to get rentals. Yeah. If I can find a rental and I can clear $400, regardless if I don't get it for 50 cents on the dollar, maybe I pay market, but I can get a rental in there, make $400, would you still buy the property?
I think that's you have to come up, you have to make that decision yourself. So for us, we probably won't buy that deal because we like going in with some equity in the deal in case things turn sideways, because we've heard about horror stories in 2008, 2009. So we like to buy with some equity. So you as the investor, you have to decide what are your buying principles, right? When you build out of Everbowl, you have your principles of it needs this demographics, it needs this many people. For us, when we buy a rental, we want some equity in the deal and we want to make $400 per door. So you have to decide what are your principles.
So you would say my principles are I want to make $400, but I don't know. I'm just new. Yeah. It's my first deal. You're my mentor.
I would tell you, don't buy that deal.
Don't buy that deal. Equity. Like, how much equity do I want?
And again, it really depends on you. So for us, I want to be, we use that Burr model. So I want to be able to go in and cash out refinance because that's tax-free money that you're getting to go ahead and you can reinvest that money as well. So everyone is different. So for us, that first deal, let's say it was worth $150 when we bought it. We paid $60,000 for it. We was able to take 75%. So what is that, about $105,000, $110,000? So whatever the math, let's call it $100,000. So if I'm all into that deal for $85,000, I can pay back that investor, I can pay back the credit card, and I have another $15,000 cash that I can put in my pocket tax-free. And I can take that $15,000, buy another property, I can take that $15,000 and invest into something.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. So there's one thing we do share, three of us. We're all girl dads.
Yeah.
You two more than me, but because I have you don't have a son, right?
Nope.
Yeah. Mm-mm. I'm the only one to have a son.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know that my life choices early on.
Same.
Listen, I say the same thing, but
I'm gonna be punished for that.
It's that syntax. That's what it's called. Yeah. That syntax.
Yes. As I told you how I got my college degree, I was destined for daughters.
Right. Yes.
But they're the best.
Yes. Yes, they agree.
They're the best. I'll tell you, I don't know how to say no to them.
Yeah.
But man, do I work hard because of them.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest, like they have me in the palm of their hand.
Yeah.
My wife too. Yeah. It's crazy. I'm in a house with three women and they all just control me and tell me what's what. And I think tough, like, oh, I'm going to say no. Yeah. I never do. Yeah. Do you guys have that problem?
I definitely have that problem. I think about it because I do a lot of reflection. As entrepreneurs, how you go home and, you know, you're not saying this, like, but your kids run you, but then you run companies and you lead people, et cetera. It's just a crazy dichotomy to me that how that works.
Yeah.
So same with me, man. I kind of have that struggle, but one of our mentors gave us this piece of advice, and I'm going to share it with you.
Is please.
This guy exited his company for $1 billion, like doing really well.
And this billion with a B?
Billion with a B. And okay. I asked him, and any entrepreneur that's successful in the world's eyes, meaning they've made a lot of money, I asked them two questions. One, what's the biggest mistake that you've made? And two, if you have kids, like, what's one lesson you learned as a parent? And one of the lessons that he taught us was, I didn't give my kids the gift of want. Because I had so much money, I never had to tell them no. And now my kids, they're great kids, but it's always, they're 30, 35 years old. Hey, Dad, I need this. Hey, Dad, I need that. As opposed to going out and getting it on their own. So one thing that we pay a lot of attention to and that we're intentional about is making sure we give the kids the gift of want. Because, yeah, if you want something new, yes, I can go and get it, but now you have to earn it. So now that you have to earn it, you're going to do what you're supposed to do so that you can get that desired reward, reward that you want.
You know, that one hits home. I have a 6-year gap between my oldest and my youngest. Yeah. My oldest, I was broke when she was a little baby.
My story.
And she has grit and toughness, and she'll find a way to be successful.
Yeah.
My youngest, she was born more with a silver spoon.
Yeah.
She knows how to order on Amazon and DoorDash. She knows how to hit me with the green card, the green light.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I need money for this. Well, it's just another $50, Dad. Yeah. Like, I tell my wife all the time, she's a good kid. She's got a ton of empathy. We taught her a lot of good things.
Yeah.
But where I messed up as a dad, and it's hard now because she's 11, is I did not instill the value of money, the value of going to get it, because I was just tired with the second one. It was 6 years later. I had money. It was just a different experience. Yeah, yeah. And so what you're saying is so true.
And again, it's our, because when I had my first daughter, I was broke. And then we started making money, and I see the difference between the kids and how they view things and how they, for us growing up, one pair of shoes is all I had for the entire school year. So I had to take care of them. I buy them a new pair of shoes. The next day, they're dirty. I'm just like, you don't value anything. But like you said, we spend a lot of time reflecting. I had to reflect as a parent and understand that she don't value anything because you didn't teach her to value it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids do what they see you do, or they do, you know, the things that you teach them, right? And I've never made them value anything. So now I'm being very intentional about making sure that they value things. So my oldest, she loves Starbucks. And before, we'd just go to Starbucks and get her anything she wants. Caramel Frappuccino with two chocolate croissants. That's all she orders. So now...
mine's the pink drink and a bacon cheese Gouda sandwich.
So now I tell her, if you want Starbucks, you have to read books. So for every book you read, I'll pay you $20. And that $20, you can do whatever you want with, you know, with your money. So now I'm getting the win of you're educating yourself. I think that's the issue that a lot of kids have nowadays. They're not educating themselves. So I'm making her educate herself. But then two, I'm teaching her that you have to work hard. Cause she, let's face it, she doesn't like reading. That's my reality. And I've created that reality for her because I've always iPad. So now I'm trying to change that and I'm trying to shift that so she can focus on things that's going to help her grow.
Smart. Yeah. That's brilliant. Well, guys, I am so thankful that you came here today. Yeah. I'm excited to now call you friends.
Yes, awesome.
As I said, I've been following your story on social. I've been following your content. I love how you lead and give to the community because you figured out success. You figured out these formulas, and now people are looking to you. I mean, you guys are the leaders of tomorrow and today. There's a community of people that need that path. They need that recipe. And you guys are doing it. You're doing it from a place of integrity. You're doing it from a place of openness and honestness. I ask everyone before we sit down, is there anything you want to talk about or anything you don't? And you both said we're open books. Just let's go. Anything we can do to help? And I felt it. I'm excited, man. And I want to thank you both so much for coming on today.
Man, thank you for having us. Again, I'm truly inspired. Like, I leave this trip more inspired than when I came. Seeing what you've been able to build and just learning about your story and just actually seeing it. Exposure leads to expansion, and you did that for me today, so thank you so much.
Listen, he hit the nail dead on the head. I can't say it any better. Thank you for having us. Thank you for allowing us to share our story with your audience.
Well, thank you, guys.
Hey, everyone. First, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. And if you guys haven't heard about my new book, Relationship Bank Account, click the link in the show notes or search the title on Amazon. This book is packed with all my secrets to success in both relationships and life. Make sure to pick up a copy, and if the book helps you on your journey, let us know by leaving a review. I appreciate all of you and can't wait to see you on the next one.